Excuse me. Play with more than this.
Good evening, Happy New Year, and welcome to tonight's City Council meeting. This is the regular meeting for January 6th of 2015. The time now is 7 p.m. Liz, will you call the roll?
Certainly. Council members are present and establishing a quorum.
I'll write a note.
Tenser, Cutaback, Camp, Davis, Gamble, and Durin.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford, will you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
Inspire me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The first item that we have on this evening's agenda is Agenda Bill 15001. This is the confirmation of reappointments to boards and appointments to boards and commissions and their oath of office. And who has this?
You.
Liz? Oh, I do.
It says you.
Okay. I have this. So we have tonight two appointments to the Ethics Board with the regular terms of office for the members being 3 years. We have Ms. Williams and Ms. Lee, and their term of appointment will be January 1st, 2015 to December 31st of 2017. We also have a library board appointment. This is a 5-year appointment, and this would be Ms. Dillaway, and the term of appointment would be January 1st of 2015 through December 31st of 2019. For the Parks Board, we have the school district representative, Mr. Yingling, and
two reappointments.
I'm used to running off of my own speaking notes. Ms. Corpeland and Ms. Chamberlain's appointments. These are reappointments, and those would be through December 31st of 2018. And the last one that we have, and those two are reappointments, and the code change that you made at the end of the year allowed for those reappointments to occur. The last one that we have is a Planning Commission appointment, or rather reappointment. This is Bill Christensen, and that would be from January 1st of 2015 through December 31st of 2018. So, Council, do I have a motion to confirm the appointment?
Do each one individually.
Yeah, you can do each one individually if you like. And Councilmember Hanford, I didn't see who was first.
I'll move to confirm the mayor's appointment of Catherine Williams and Lorena Lee to the Ethics Board.
Second.
We have a first from Councilmember Hanford, and I have a second from Councilmember Rasmussen. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor? Oh, I'm sorry, Councilmember Gamble.
Are they in the audience? Is anybody here?
Ms. Lee is here.
Hello, Ms. Lee.
Sorry.
Thank you for being willing to serve.
Thanks for
very much.
Kevin Coppermell and Ms. Chamberlain are also here as well. Okay.
Thank you.
I just wanted. Yeah. Thank you, Ms. Lee, for stepping up and serving very much.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion on the motion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. The next person that we have would be Gail Dillaway to the Library Board.
So moved.
Councilmember Gehring and Councilmember Councilmember Cutaback.
Councilmember Cutaback.
I should probably have some coffee before I come to the meeting.
This is your second year.
This is not your first night.
Cold water from last week. I have a first and I have a second from Councilmember Cutaback. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Next one that we have is for the Parks Advisory Board. Councilmember Rasmussen.
I'll make a motion to confirm the appointment of Karen Coppernell, Shauna Chamberlain, and Ralph Yingling to the Parks Board.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Camp. Any discussion on the motion? Councilmember Gamble?
Again, thank you for serving.
Okay. Thank you. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 7-0. Last one that we have is Bill Christensen to the Planning Commission. Councilmember Gehring.
I move to approve the mayor's appointment of Bill Christensen to the Planning Commission.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Gehring. I have a second from Councilmember Camp. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 7-0. Congratulations
on
your reappointments. And your appointments. Yes, you will now come forward and put your hand up for the oath of office. So, Liz, will you go ahead and would you like to do them all at the same time?
Sure, let's do them
okay, individually.
You do confirm that you, Loretta Lee, do solemnly swear or affirm that you will support the Constitution and laws of the United States and the State of Washington and ordinances of the City of Monroe, and that you will faithfully and impartially perform and discharge the duties of an ethics board member according to law and to the best of your ability and understanding. Thank you very much for your continued and new service, and again, thank you very much. The next item that we have on our agenda, I'm sorry, Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. Could we have a 2-minute recess, please?
Yes.
Thank you.
Very good.
They moved the cubbies, and I need my glasses.
Okay.
If you're doing that, I'm going to change the eagles. Looking at it, not
first for everything,
All right, we're back in session. And so the reason why the flags would have been reversed and your glasses would have been missing is that the carpeting was redone in here over the winter break. The city crew did a great job of recarpeting portions of the other portion of City Hall behind that area as well as in here. And if you go in back, you'll notice that there's been some changes in location for some staff. Brad is now up against the windows in front. And as you know, Edie retired. We had a retirement party last week for her, and she will be missed. Liz has moved up to where Edie was to put her in close proximity to the city administrator. So you'll see some changes back there, some paint going on the walls, and do you have anything else? And then we'll continue with the meeting. Okay. That would be why your chairs are lowered and the flags are reversed and you can't find your glasses. Okay. So we're going to move on to comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matters subject to a public hearing. We ask that you keep your comments to 5 minutes per speaker. Is there anybody that would like to come forward to speak? Anybody? Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. Anybody? Councilmember Gehring?
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Okay.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Gehring, a second from Councilmember Hanford. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the consent agenda, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 7-0. We're now on to new business item number one. This is AB 15003. This is a discussion on Lewis Street Combined Sewer Separation Project. And we have our Public Works group here to present on this. So, Jim?
Scott
is going to represent. Okay. Jim will come later. Okay.
Thank you, Council.
Oh, sleepy time.
Three on it and one off.
Close. There we go.
Apparently, the lights are darker now, too.
Oh, my goodness. Now you could really need the caffeine. Where's the caffeine?
Jeez.
Drooling.
We'll be using candlelight for the rest of this evening's meeting.
Good evening. I'm Scott Peterson, the manager of the Design and Construction Division of Public Works. And with me is Jim Gardner, senior engineer. And tonight we wanted to bring forth the Agenda Bill 3 to discuss a couple items related to the Lewis Street Combined Sewer Separation Project. The first item would be to whether or not keep curbs on in the downtown corridor on Main Street or to remove them and use portable wheel stops, removable wheel stops in their place. And the second item is to whether or not to go ahead and create another capital project to address West Main Street, west of Lewis Street, between Lewis Street and Lakewood. So that in the end we end up with a downtown corridor that's similar and uniform on both sides of the street. We'll start first with the curbs or wheel stops option. And Jim Gardner, who is the project manager for that, he will do that part of the presentation, and then we will have a Q&A session right after that discussion point before moving on to the whether or not to. Add another capital project for Miss West Main Street. So, yeah,
good evening.
Good evening.
We'll go to the next slide. There are several cities in the state that have gone to a no curb option on a few of their streets. In Mercer Island, you can see that they've got red colored pavement separating the parking lot from the pedestrian area. In Enumclaw, they've got several blocks of Cole Street where they've got actually a gutter between the driving lane and the parking lane. You can see a catch basin up there near the S on the street on the left hand side. That's to help tell people that they're off the driving lane, they're in a parking area. The slope would let them know that they're entering the parking lane a little bit. They've spaced their followers quite a ways apart. Just for delineation. We've heard that they've had a lot of trouble with people still hitting them, damaging them, a lot of maintenance costs associated with those. What the city has right now, what we've done on Fremont Street and East Hill, is we've got the pavement, the impervious pavement, and the parking lanes. We've got a 6-inch curb and a impervious sidewalk there. Section we'd like to do on Main Street is the left-hand side that says curbless. It will gentle out the slope of the parking on Main Street. It's up to 8% in some places right now. We put the removable wheel stops in so that cars know when to stop. They don't end up parking on the sidewalk or running into a building or a pedestrian. They'd be removable so that when we have events like the Christmas fair or the 3-on-3 basketball that we've had in the past, the wheel stops could be removed by Jenga's staff, and pedestrians could walk without any trip hazards from buildings on one side to the buildings on the other side. It opened up like a large plaza at that point. So right-hand side is the other option where we would keep the curbs and a little steeper parking area. That's pretty much what we have out there right now. Some of the design elements that we feel we need to consider are, you know, without the curb, decrease the slope on the parking lanes, makes it easier to for people to access, gets it closer to ADA compliance. The lack of curbing facilitates the events where we close Main Street. The wheel stops can be removable. It is estimated that it takes about 24 staff hours to remove them and replace them just for East Main Street area. Curbing is what we have throughout the rest of the city. Easy to maintain. I don't have people damaging it, or the street sweepers can usually get up next to it and clean it. We have a time constraint on this decision, however. We've got an ecology grant to do the Lewis Street Fine Sewer Separation. That money has to be spent by June 30th of this year. After June 30th, any unspent money goes away, and we'll have to pay for everything out of our own pockets. It's about $780,000 that ecology has given us for this project. We estimate construction for the entire Lewis Street project will take about 3 months. It starts about 200 feet south of Fremont, goes up to the alley north of Main on Lewis Street, and goes on Main Street from Lewis to Ferry. The state is allowing us to use pervious pavement in their right-of-way as a test case. I want to see how it works, you know, how much maintenance there is to it, whether it holds up. And this is the only area they're allowing it this time. But I figure it'll take 3 months to construct it. By the time we go to advertisement and sign the contract with the contractor, it's about a 6-week process. So we have to go to ad by the middle of February, and we estimate we've got about 4 weeks worth of work to get the plans ready to go to ad. So we really need a decision on this. That's
all I've got. Are there
any questions? Thank you, and thanks for all this information. I'm really trying to get the benefit of doing this. I understand it could look a lot nicer, and from that aspect, I think, you know, prettying it up is great, and it kind of combining it with this other project. And but it seems like it's right now, because we got to use this grant money, is that it use it or lose it, and if we don't, then it's just money that's gone?
Right now, the plans are to put in 6-inch curb on Main Street. So we're doing the project, we're designing the project. It's just, if we're going to change it from having 6-inch curb to no curb on Main Street, so then we need time to adjust the plans and finish them up.
Okay. So you're going to do that anyway, and instead of doing that, hey, why don't... Let's do this instead, right? Okay, I'm just looking through the pros and cons here that you guys have listed. Decrease the slope in the parking lane. So that's what you're talking about. The ecology kind of wants to see what's happening, because usually water runs off there, and then it drains because of the slope.
Pervious.
Right now, the water runs down the curb line,
right?
The curb line to the catch basin,
right?
Flows into our sewer system,
right?
And gets treated to the water. Ecology is helping us pay to separate the stormwater from the sanitary,
sewer. Okay.
The way we're choosing to do that is to put in a pervious pavement and infiltrate the water on site.
Okay.
And then we'll just plug those pipes that lead to the sewer system.
What's the benefit of separating those two? Is there a push to do that, or I'm curious. I guess that's the first I've.
Yeah,
I just never really thought about
more
it.
Money to
okay.
Stormwater.
Oh, all right.
We estimate removing this stormwater for this project from the sanitary sewer removes about 5 million gallons a year.
Treating rainwater.
I've been told that we treat about 550 million gallons a year right now from stormwater in the treatment plant. So if we remove that water from the system, we won't have to upgrade the system to get more housing in the area. So we'll save us costs there. We're not spending on electricity for the treatment process.
Okay. So just help me out then. I start thinking about the whole town, and this is great, but you got a couple other questions that I think of then. How do you, where does all the stormwater go then? I mean, if it's not just going to run into a catch basin.
The perk is pavement, looks kind of like Rice Krispie treats, and the water hits that, goes through that, is either rock gallery underneath it, so it'll store enough water and ground holes or sort of, which is a big push that ecology has.
Okay.
It wants to recharge the groundwater rather than collecting it and shipping off to the streams where it causes erosion.
So absorb the water back in. And this is going to be done downtown, but through the rest of town, it will still, it's, I mean, I've got a catch bin right in front of my house, right? I mean, anything that...
I'm not sure where you live.
Up in the farm, right at the end of the street. I mean, there's a catch, and maybe that's going somewhere else. I just assumed it was stormwater.
No, water from the farm goes to the detention pond.
Yeah.
And out the detention pond is the wood street.
Oh, okay. Oh, right on. Okay, so it's not, we aren't treating that. So stuff that goes in, okay, all right.
Yeah.
So then other areas of town, I guess, if we have the 550 million gallon, if we're really going to be able to save that, that's pretty significant. Each area of town's a little bit different with how it works, right?
Yeah, the downtown area is nice. We've got deep soils there.
Okay.
We've got soils that will treat stormwater, so we don't have to do anything special to it.
Okay.
The soil will, treat it for organics and contaminants. So what we have to do is get it there and let it absorb to the ground.
Would there be any other areas of town where, so if it works here, is this something that we might, would there be other opportunities to have grants like this? Is that kind of why ecology is kind of, hey, let's see how this works? Is that kind of?
Yeah, we've already gotten two other projects completed that ecology gave us grant money for.
Okay.
Fremont Street, they paid, I think it was about $600,000 towards that project.
For the same thing, so are we soaking it in? Oh, I didn't realize that, okay. Yeah.
And then Blakely and Hill Street just completed.
Okay.
It was the same thing, we had $1 million grant from ecology.
Okay. And since those are just done, and so combining everything together, great. Extra maintenance, that's awesome. Thanks for that information. Easier to maintain curbing, so. And something you install, why would we take it out? I know it's. Once you've got it there, I mean, that's kind of the purpose of why it's there.
We don't have any way to get that water to a creek.
Okay.
So the only way to get rid of it right now is through the sanitary sewer systems. The curbing's easy because you can sweep up there, sweep up all the dirt. The pervious, the dirt will get washed into the pores. We need to street sweep up regularly to try and keep everything picked up as we can. What I've heard from other places that have pervious pavement, they go through and they pressure wash it and vacuum sweep it at the same time they pressure wash it.
Okay.
About once every 5 years, it all maintains.
I don't think I was clear on my questions. The removable wheel stops, why would they need to be removable? Sorry, I wasn't clear on what I was asking.
So when we have an event on Main Street, we close down Main Street, they get pulled up and darn near trip hazard, so people are at the event enjoying themselves.
Okay.
They don't have to step over anything.
And so, okay, so you have, would anybody be able to do that? Would the event organizers be able to do that? Would someone from the city have to do that? Just thinking through that. Additional staff time, things like, I'm just trying to think of all that.
I don't know if our crews have to do it or not.
Okay.
But yeah, it'd be possible for anybody.
Thinking of convenience for the folks, and all that. So, all right, I appreciate it. Thanks for the clarifications. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Councilmember Cutterback.
Thank you. Thanks for the information. From my viewpoint, I think going curbless is a great idea. I grew up in a community that the main street had no curbs, and it just provided a different feel for downtown and for events and a fair like and. It just really spurred a lot of movement and pedestrian friendly and the look of it. So I think it's a great idea. But just a couple questions. Has this been vetted through downtown businesses or the chamber, and are they supportive of going to a curbless?
We went through, Jeffrey and I have been walking through downtown once a month, and it is something we brought up to get feedback on and explain what it meant.
Yeah,
to the businesses that were downtown, and there was much more positive feedback than there was negative feedback.
Okay.
And the chamber completely supports it.
Okay. Just curious if we had any of that. And then is there any data at all that suggests there's more accidents or, you know, cars going over onto the sidewalk or pedestrians? I mean, I haven't seen anything like that, but I was just curious if there was any data that's...
I don't know of any
okay.
data, but that's one reason why we're calling out the wheel stop.
Okay.
Because the cars, you know, they'll hit that 4-inch curve, and although they should stop, and it won't stop anybody from jumping at jumping on a normal curve.
And when we do it and we design it, are we looking at doing a design where the pavement is a different color, or do you know that okay. kind of?
Well, the wheel stops, cool. We feel needs to be set in regular concrete, not pervious.
Okay.
So it'll probably be about a couple of lines, wider. Yeah. We haven't worked that out yet, but we're talking about coloring that a different color.
Okay.
So cool. It'd be red, and you know, pervious section would be a tan color.
And you guys really feel the wheel stops are absolutely necessary because the, I don't know how they look or for the feel of it. I know if it's a safety issue, where I've seen, you know, just as you showed the examples, I didn't see wheel stops there. I was just curious why you felt that was absolutely necessary in this case.
Well, the other facilities use bollards to try and differentiate also parallel parking. Yeah.
Okay, so our parking downtown isn't parallel. That's a good point. Okay.
And we talked about on staff last week about putting in bollards, and I know that Councilmember Camp and I talked about bollards, and we reached the point of lit bollards. The bollards were substantially more expensive than the removable wheel stops. Okay. And one of the things that we discussed was that if we put in the removable wheel stops today in that concrete band that he was talking about, that in the future, if a future council wanted to go to bollards, you could just install them at that time when you had more money. And if you wanted to light them, which cost a lot more, then you could do that at that time too. The experience that other cities have was that even in parallel parking situations, and here you'd have cars going directly to the bollards, people run into them. And there's an expense, a considerable expense with replacing them, as well as replacing the lit ones if we did lit. So that's why what's before you tonight would be the wheel stops.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Are there? Oh, my gosh! I'm not keeping track here. Councilmember Camp, and then Rasmussen and Gamble.
At the demonstration we had at the chamber event, or they were using not only the permeable sidewalk or concrete, but they're also using a brick lay. Now, would you be using that in addition to this?
Yeah, we're planning on using the brick on Main Street.
And that's interlocking brick, which performs the same function of allowing the water to drain.
Correct.
Snow gutters, goes through the soil.
And we're thinking it might be a little bit easier to clean also.
Okay. And the vacuum unit that would be required to clean it, now that was something I had heard discussions of being able to use that at other municipalities would be able to go in on the cost, so that would be mitigated as well. Correct.
Yeah. Snohomish County has bought units for cleaning impervious concrete.
Okay.
And they commented to me that, you know, when they get it, they were wondering if we'd be interested in having a joint use agreement.
Right.
Where, you know, they can confiscate and take care of ours for.
So this is the direction that municipalities are going in terms of their stormwater treatment, trying to get it away from sanitary sewer.
Get away from sanitary sewer, trying to get away from large detention ponds or vaults.
Okay.
On Fremont Street, we're looking at a large detention vault initially for the street, and going to the previous fees, where they did the vault, eliminated all the catch bases that went with it, and cut the cost of the project by several hundred thousand dollars.
Mm-hmm. And it would also add to the experience when we're having an event on Main Street, pedestrians not tripping over curbs, and also the possibility maybe of widening sidewalks and making them more pedestrian friendly. It's one of the things I'd heard at the demo. So
yeah, that's a possibility. Besides more parallel parking, wider sidewalks, it'd be fairly easy to adjust for that.
How hard would it be? I'm assuming we have a angled parking at this point. I don't know if we'd go to parallel or not. Is there a significant, would there be a significant impact or cost in having the blocks moved out to adjust to parking, or are we set pretty much? We'll have to decide now that we're going to go angled or we're going to do parallel.
There'd be a cost associated with it. We'd have to figure out how to make sure people didn't go beyond the parallel parking area.
Okay.
I'm not sure how well the blocks would hold the curb stops if we want to move those out.
Okay.
We might have to do it with planters or bollards or something like that.
All right. Thank you.
And to be clear, just to, if you take a look at page 13 in the PDF, the bottom, you'll see a graphic where Main Street has a band of yellow and a band of aqua, I guess, or turquoise. The band of yellow on there are the tiles or the blocks that Councilmember Camp was talking about, and the that turquoise blue color, that is the impervious concrete. And so as you're looking at that, you'll realize that there are two different materials and then a band that separates the two. Okay. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. So the cost of the removable wheel stops is $20,000 for on Main Street. And so does that put one stop in front of each parking stall then? Is that okay? And I guess I'm just trying to picture what these things are looking like. Is it just kind of the rubbery looking parking lot curb?
That hasn't been decided yet.
Okay.
The rubbery looking ones are about $50 a piece. They've got some galvanized metal ones that people have shown me that they're about $100 a piece.
Okay.
They also make plastic ones that come in different colors. I think there's yellow, blue, white, black, I think, or colors as well.
Okay. And yeah, understand that it depends on the whichever one is decided on, but the average lifespan of these stops?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay. I guess I'm where I'm going with this is, are we going to have to replace them every 5 years, 10 years, or are they good for 50 years type of deal? I mean...
Question.
I'm not sure.
Okay. Okay. I mean, I would be very curious to figure out what, yeah, a little bit more information along those lines. Just because if we're going to have to replace them frequently, then yeah, it's a different approach then. Heights-wise, did I understand you saying that they're about 4 inches tall?
Correct.
Okay. And the curbing that's on Main Street now is 5-6 inches? Okay. So when you initially said removable wheel stops and showed the examples from Mercer Island, I, as a runner, I had fears of cars just going right on the sidewalk.
Exactly.
And someone,
yeah,
having, I've had close calls personally, so you know, 4 inches, 5 inches, I mean, a little bit of a difference, but it's still jarring enough, I think. So I guess I'm really curious about the lifespan of these things. So, thank you.
Councilmember Gamble, anything else?
No, I'm good. Thank
Councilmember
you.
Councilmember Gamble, you're welcome.
Yeah, no, actually, Councilman Rasmussen asked a couple of questions I would ask. Really is just the data around, because as I'm looking on the wheel stops, I mean, the stuff that I heard in the presentation is where the bollards are being used, that they do get hit, and that there's a cost that's associated with that. I think the question was asked. We haven't really done any analysis of any other city that's using these currently, because none of the pictures or anything in here are pictures of wheel stops in any surrounding cities.
That's right.
We haven't found any cities that have no curbing and perpendicular parking or angle parking.
Okay. Good. I would be really, you know, I'm a little stickler for safety. Son of a safety director, so you're gonna have to bear with me here for a second, because that piece concerns me just a touch, that we don't have, that there's no, that we would make a decision without any sort of data associated with you know, how successful are they in stopping vehicles from going onto the sidewalk? Because if we know that in the areas where they're using the bowers, they're being struck and there is a cost associated with them, and then that's in a parallel parking situation, then I just would be concerned that where you're actually pulling into a space. I mean, I'm sure they work as designed. I'm not questioning that in any way, shape, or form. I just would want to have some data or knowledge, you know, to the success rate, you know, to the point that Councilman Rasmussen asked, what's the lifespan? Because they are, I mean, to your point earlier around curbs, I mean, you hit it, you know, you're stopped, and there's no maintenance there.
I'll try and talk to the postmaster.
Okay.
Those type of wheel stops at the post office between the alley and the parking lot.
Great.
Okay. I'd like to keep in mind that some drivers just kind of set not a combination of visual and help from there, you know, feel behind it.
Right.
And in those parallel situations, you know, they're still looking for that little nudge. And the curb or the curb stops, wheel stops aren't there to nudge. So what comes next is eventually a baller nudges them. And when the baller
or a lamp post
gets hit, it gets a little tip.
Yeah, I guess I'm just looking at it from the standpoint of the difference for us is that if you don't stop, you can hit a pedestrian because you're going into the sidewalk. You know, as opposed to a parallel parking, the goal is to get parallel as opposed to you're pulling in, you know, and parking straight on. But I hear what you're saying. That makes sense. So yeah, other cities, lifespan, just general all data on it. And that's, I did not know that the post office had them, so that would be great. I'm gonna drive over and see them.
Exactly.
now that I know that, I'll try it out. and then the only thing on the cost piece. So when I look in the packet, it talked about that there's, you know, really the cost differentiation is minimal, but it doesn't spell it out. It just says that it's $20,000, you know, for the wheel stops. And I guess all I'd want to see is, you know, hey, what's the project cost if we just go with curbs? And then what would the project cost be, you know, if we went with this, you know, option? Is it an addition? As opposed to just saying, well, it's close. I just would like to see that breakdown.
Last couple of projects we've had, the curbing has been costing about $30 a lineal foot.
Okay.
So we do need to get about 600 lineal feet, so about $18,000 for just the curbing to go in.
Okay. So an $18,000 as opposed to $20,000, and so then the difference, just looking at the cost per se, would then just be, okay, well then what's the maintenance on the wheel stops as opposed to that. So then we can make an informed decision on actual total cost. That'd be great. Cool. That's it. That's all I have. Thank you.
Councilmember Gehring?
Thank you for asking. Just along the lines, I certainly think it's a great idea, and I appreciate the concerns about maintenance. All those well taken. I'm just, as I'm sitting here, I'm thinking, is there a way to kind of a hybrid to make it work, so we can use the money from the ecology, the brick idea in the parking area we have now, and leaving curbs there. It also improves the look and feel of the downtown. If you had a brick area where the parking area was, the water drains, the storm water is going not in our wastewater treatment center. We still have a curb, so we don't have to deal with the maintenance issues, and you have an improved look and feel. Just, and I'm sure there's something wrong with that. I'm just thinking, you know, is there a way to do that? Which then there's kind of a win all the way around.
Well, that was the original plan.
That is the original plan.
Is it a paver to have 6-inch curve?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The thought just came up that when we have these events.
Crazy, the original idea. Okay.
So the question is, do we want to keep the original plan?
Do you want to keep the original plan versus this?
Go to the wheel stop.
I'd certainly like the look and feel of how it can look, but I do like the idea of a curb. But again, after we see the numbers, I think that I don't want to shoot down a really cool idea because, I mean, it's a cool, really cool idea, but I want to make it work on a number of levels. And so, I mean, you were there and you saw some of the cool things about it, and I think later lighted house will be really cool at some point. But if the original idea is actually going to, can improve look and feel, be done a little cheaper, reduce our maintenance costs. I think that's something we can choose to, but we need to see your numbers, the numbers that you're asking for. Yeah, sure.
I didn't say that part. I think it's like a great idea, too, from the standpoint of we want to revitalize downtown and all that kind of stuff. I would just hate to make a decision without looking at the data from a safety perspective. If there's something, there's just, to me, there's not enough, for me personally, there's not enough information here before I feel extremely comfortable to say, yeah, let's do this. If we do a search, we look at areas that are using it, post office, whatever, but especially other cities that have done this in a downtown area, I'd feel a heck of a lot better. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, so again, I think curbless is great. I think it will improve. Maybe the original hybrid idea will work. So if we get the numbers, then I think we'll have a better idea. Thank you.
Councilmember Hanford?
Yeah, I think the curbless idea is great. Just like has been said, I'd like to just hear a little more details, analysis compared to some cities, and lifespan of the...
I want to Google it right now.
That's it.
Councilmember Camp?
Thank you. Maybe I'm getting confused. So a curb is 6 inches tall, correct? And the wheel stop is how tall?
4.
So in effect, it's wide enough to stop the front wheels of a car, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's 6 feet long.
And it's 2 inches shorter.
Than a curb.
And then a curb. And it has the same effect. So the question in terms of safety is whether or not those 2 inches is going to stop the car, or just 6 inches isn't going to stop a car. But 4 inches, I guess I'm confused on your safety concern on the height of the curb.
It's not on the height of the curb.
Okay, then I'm concerned. Then I'm confused.
Yeah.
I'll yield if you can explain it to me.
We don't have any pictures or anything. There's nothing in the packet in regards to a removable wheel stop.
And what they look like.
What they look like, what's their lifespan, what's their, any of, I have no clue. I mean, I take your word for it, but I don't feel comfortable making a decision like that without at least seeing some information on what we want to put in. I know what concrete that stops. I get that.
Okay.
I don't know what we got here.
Could you do concrete?
Yeah.
Because I think I've parked in some parking lots, I think, that have wheel stops.
Concrete.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So we could do that, too.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea. I don't have anything to go off of. That's really where I'm at.
Okay, that's fine. I just
I wasn't at the fair thing you were at. Did you get to look at them? Like a removable wheel stop?
Well, they showed me some pictures of them.
There you go.
Okay. They sell corn dogs.
I just told them. I said I really want to Google right now, but I can't.
Blocked.
There we go. That answers it. Thank you.
Okay. So there will be a second item that we're going to move on to. Is there anything else about curbless versus curb versus curbless? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move on to the next item.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks very much.
Well, Seth, I'm simpler in one way, maybe more complex in another, and that is, since we're doing this to the east block of the main street, should we go ahead and do it to the west block of the street while we're at it, and get it done this year? There's similarities and differences to the projects. The similarities, of course, are self-explanatory. The same treatments in the end, the streets will look the same. They have similar timelines. And Jim mentioned earlier that the East Main Street is funded primarily by a Department of Ecology grant that has an expiration date at the end of June. The project runs longer. Those costs, any invoices and whatnot occurring after June 30th will be borne directly from city funds. The project for West Main Street, there is no grant, so that will come out of city funds. We have identified that this is essentially removing storm from sewer, that the storm and sewer capital funds would pay for that work. And I believe we had in the council cover sheet, but it's $220,000 would come from the sewer capital fund, and $110,000 would come from the storm fund to cover the cost of doing this West Main Street project. So, and to be clear, of course, it would be West Main Street from Lewis to Lakeland. So, In the end, what you'd have is essentially downtown core to Main Street all get done in the same construction season. And we had targeted to have this West Main Street complete by the Faraday's Parade, so that we can maybe use this sort of new concept at one of our summer festivals. So that's it. That, in a nutshell, is what the second item is. Do we create a new capital project to work on West Main Street this year as well?
And the idea there being that that whatever it is that council would want to do, curb or curbless on the east side, that for consistency we could do to the west side as well. So that that was part of the consideration. Councilmember Cutaback.
Is there any cost savings, you know, doing them kind of in conjunction, or would it be this much if we waited a year from now?
No, it could go either way, honestly. Okay. If we get a different contractor bidding on the second project, he would have his own price for maybe the contractor who's working on the first one has a feel for it.
Right.
Kind of come in and know what he's getting into with the second one.
I mean, any savings on design costs, since we're designing one half right now, and do you know?
No, not really. I mean, that's okay. Design's internal inside the city, so save us some time because we kind of know what we're going
right.
for with the design, so we can probably speed up production to some degree. But, you know, there could be some elements out there that we don't have on East Main Street that we would incur, but we need a topographic mm-hmm. survey, you know, collected so we see the data in front of us so we can begin our design. But for the large part, you know, I'd say the same about the same, other than if we've delayed, we have, you know, potential inflationary costs.
Sure.
You know, economy's coming back around.
Right.
Typically, contractors have more jobs to do.
Right.
The competitive market.
Well, to me, I mean, even though it doesn't sound like there's a cost savings, it makes sense if we have the funds to do both projects at the same time. I think it would really show we're doing something for downtown and have the whole look and feel of it all the same done in the same year. So, I mean, if we have that funding and it's available, I wouldn't know why we wouldn't do it at the same time. So those are my thoughts.
Thank you. Councilmember Gehring.
I absolutely agree. My question is about funding. And so I see where you have here on page 11 where that would come from. This would be within what we already have budgeted for the year. This isn't going to make it. We wouldn't be able to do something else that we had planned these monies for with this.
I'm understanding, Brad, maybe you can correct me this at. This would be more impact to the 2015 fund, but the funds are available.
Right.
Not budgeted, but there is cash.
There's yeah. four things like this, and that's why it's there. Okay, excellent. And then I feel like I see the REIT. The only thing that makes me nervous about that is the REIT, and it seems like I thought we've had that word come up a couple times, but we'll take a little from here, take a little from there. Why the $20,000 from REIT versus just $10,000 more from each of those other funds?
Traffic-related stuff isn't related to sewer or storm, so it can't come out of the enterprise funds.
Okay.
It has to come out of the streets.
The trafficked aspect of it. Okay. Okay. And so, and that, and REIT is an applicable place,
correct.
An allowable place for that to come from.
Yes.
Okay. As long as we're not draining that too quickly for what's coming in. I know we have a bunch of houses being built, but we don't have all they haven't been sold yet, so we don't have all that REIT that's going to come from those new houses yet. So.
Currently, there's $233,000 in the bank for REIT.
Okay.
And there's only $100,000
being
expended out of that this year.
Very good. So this would put us at 120 of the 230, leaving 110.
140. The wheel stops for east side and the wheel stops for the west side. 20 plus 20.
40, that's correct, if we're going to do this on, okay, very good. Okay, yeah, I absolutely agree. We should do it on both sides. It'll look great. We need continuities on both sides of Lewis Street. It's the continuity of downtown. If we're going to do it on one, we should do it on the other, and I appreciate the clarifications on the funding. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thank you. I'm in complete agreement. I think it's a great putting a foot forward that we are serious about helping the downtown, like we talked about, and this is a great tangible way to start. Mm-hmm. So I'm all for it. Just a quick question. So I'm trying to envision what you're talking about doing here on both sides is exactly the same as you've done on the Fremont and the other streets by Thrive there, right?
It would be similar to the sidewalk. It would be pervious concrete. That's kind of where we stop. We have this curb, right. We'll stop discussion. And then where people park on Hill Street and Fremont, that's also pervious pavement. But what we're proposing on Main Street is to use paper blocks.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I mean, as far as like shutting the entire block down, grading down a foot or however deep, and you're talking about major overall.
We would not be impacting national driving lanes. The asphalt driving lanes that are in Main Street are not proposed to be modified or redone. So those will stay as they are right now.
Okay, so you would just, where they're going to park?
Outward.
Outward. So that whole parking area up to the buildings would all be impervious. So it'll match the look as far as tarmac, asphalt in the middle, impervious.
That makes sense.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
All right. Well, we figured out the wheels. I know. Well, the wheel stop thing was flooring me, because in your picture it looked flat, and I didn't understand the orientation of your drawing.
It's angled.
Yes.
Angled.
You're angled. Yes.
3D angled.
We were thinking straight in.
And then straight on, and I'm like, what the? And then I Googled parking. I pulled up my iPad and Googled the wheel stop, piece there. So on the seat. That's why I was looking. I go, man, that just isn't. It's not registering. So, but anyway, still, the data will be good. The other piece. So actually, Councilman Gearing was talking a little bit about it. So Brad, we don't have. So it wasn't budgeted for this year. The money's there, but it's not. Do we have a list of capital improvement projects that this is jumping over that we are looking at for 2016?
We have nothing that specific yet for 2016. I mean, there will be money that we will not spend on something else, but one of the things that we're planning on doing is applying for more Department of Ecology grants, to continue this process in other areas of the city to separate the stormwater from sanitary sewer system. So it is money that would be spent on a different sewer project or stormwater project somewhere else, but there's not any specifics for 2016 yet.
Okay, yeah, and really all I'm really thinking is for like streets, we've got that list of, top 10 or, whatever
right.
It is. Yeah. I'm just always cognizant of something that's not on the list that all of a sudden goes to funded.
Yeah, and as far as the REIT money going to this street project rather than another street project, there is, recall from June, we did
correct.
16 different projects that need to be done, and then we also have, all the preservation work that needs to be done, and pothole fixing, and, we can't do pothole fixing, that's maintenance. So it's a capital project, so, it's $40,000 out of some other street project that we have on the list. We're also creating the new list as part of the 2015 conference and plan update, so there'll be a new list of projects that they need to be done as part of that.
Okay, so that I think is so the 40,000 would come right out of that. Got it. Okay. Thanks.
Are there any other questions? Councilmember Gearing?
It's okay to do this. Next, were we going to run into time constraint if we do it officially next week?
You can make both of these motions next week. If you want, you can make motion number two this week to show that you'd like to do the downtown. That might allow staff to get started on the west side. And you could make the decision on number one next week after you get more information on the wheel stops. Or you could make a motion for both of them tonight. Right, so okay. Three choices.
Ultimately, I was asking if there was a time, is there an additional burden if it ends up being next week?
Staff?
Versus a week.
No,
a week's a week, but a week's a
week.
Yes. Okay. Okay.
So,
to your point.
No, but you'll have the data.
You'll see the data online, so
yes.
You can weigh in. All right.
Okay, so unless there's a motion made for one or two or both or two or whatever, what we'll do is we'll have staff bring back some more information. We'll add this to next week's agenda. So, all right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to go ahead and move on to the next agenda bill. And this is AB 15004, Discussion Elected Officials Salary Commission. Gene, is this you?
Thank you, Mayor. Council, in 2014, Council showed interest in looking at a salary commission. This was then turned over to the Finance HR Committee, where we had significant discussion on how it operated, how it worked, that type of thing. We looked at other cities around the state of Washington and discovered through MRSC that 35 local jurisdictions have salary commissions in place. One of the better outlines was the city of Kirkland. They're local here, 35, and so we used that as kind of a model to start the discussion with the committee. And some of the things that we had discussed is how many members should be on it, 3 or 5. The committee felt that 5 would be a great number. 3-year terms, it'd be a staggered appointment, so that much like the council we have up here, you've got a 2-year position and everybody's up at different times. So we'd structure it in the same way. And one of the key points that came out with the commission that I want to make sure council's clear on is that we would appoint people to the salary commission. Council would confirm, much like what we did this evening, after we went through the selection process, and then that's an independent body. They would work with the staff liaison, which is Ben Morthen, our HR manager in this case, and he would provide them a salary survey of the local jurisdictions and what other elected officials are being paid, and then it's up to the salary commission to decide what that pay will be. At that point, it's out of the elected officials' hands. What they say would be moved forward. So that was one of the things that we wanted to be clear on, that council understood how the commission operated. So at this point, we've done a lot of research. We're open for questions.
Council? Okay, I don't see any comments right now. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. One of the issues that came up in the committee was the reduction of salaries. And you address it, and I can't find it right here. The salary can be increased immediately, but the reduction is not immediate. Is that correct? Or is?
That's my understanding.
Okay, so it would be to the end of the term for that particular body, I guess. Is that how it works?
That's my understanding.
All right, that was one of the issues that we were very concerned about, making this political football. So I just want to make sure it was addressed.
Yeah, it's.
Any other questions?
You say you could. I found the bullet if you wanted to. It's on page 1 of 6.
Got it.
At the bottom. The second or third to last bullet.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. Is there a motion to prepare an ordinance? Councilmember Cuddeback?
I'm trying to remember if I was the one that brought this up, because I know when we looked at and we increased the salary of city council members, those sitting, it could not increase. So currently we have council members who are not getting paid the same as other council members. So the commission seemed to obviously not, you know, take that out of our hands, and then council members would be paid equally depending on what the decision was from the commission. So I think that was one of the reasons to move forward. So it depoliticizes somewhat, our salary. So I'm in favor of moving forward on this, understanding it takes it out of our hands, and understanding that if there is a decrease, there is, you know, that could happen. But I think the way it stands right now, I'm not comfortable with the way it stands right now. And a council member could have to wait 3 years, finish their term before that change is made for their newly elected seat, if they were reelected or kept their seat. So I'm in favor of moving in this direction.
One thing that I want to verify, confirm with staff, so the concern being that right now we have two different stipends or salaries associated with our council members, because because of how the elections go. You've got, you know, four up, and then you've got four up, and that happens every 2 years. Now, if a salary commission were to decrease the salaries, then you could still end up with four members of council making a different amount than another three, because that decrease would go into effect at the end of their term. So I just want to be clear that if I'm thinking things through logically but in reverse, you could still have the same issue you have today with two groups of people making different amounts of money. The only thing is that that's kind of happening on the back end, and then also you're giving the decision-making authority to the salary commission. So I didn't want that to be lost in the conversation, if I understood that correctly. Maybe I didn't.
In talking with legal counsel, that's only in the event of a decrease.
Yes, in the event of a decrease.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
That's the difference.
Okay. So with that, is there a motion or a desired direction? Councilmember Camp.
Sure. I request the mayor and staff to prepare an ordinance establishing a salary commission for elected officials. I believe this is a motion. In accordance with the above elements as discussed, and bring them back to the full council for consideration.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Camp, a second from Councilmember Cuddeback. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 7-0. Thank you. We'll now move on to the next item in the agenda. This is final action. This is AB 15005, select/confirm 2015. It's Snohomish Health District Representative. And this is, I'm presenting. okay. All right, so we received correspondence from the Snohomish Health Board of Health, and what we did last year was the way things work is that we, the cities that are our size, have one representative that we agree to, and last year we agreed to allow Mayor Guzak of the city of Snohomish to sort of represent us, Gold Bar Snohomish Index. And before sending off a letter to the health district saying that we agree with proceeding with that in this next year for 2015, I wanted to bring this before council to see if there was agreement to continue with that for 2015. So does anybody have concerns about continuing with the same representation for 2015 as we did for 14? Okay, I see none, so we'll go ahead and okay, so there was a requested action to authorize the mayor to sign a letter certifying Mayor Karen Guzak, City of Snohomish, as the City of Monroe/District 5 Board of Health Representative for 2015.
So moved.
So moved. Okay, Councilmember Hanford made the motion.
Second.
Councilmember Rasmussen seconded. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 7-0. Okay, next item on the agenda is Councilmember Reports and Councilmember Gehring.
Nothing much other than there's a Bearcat basketball game. Going to go support them after their meeting's over. So there we go.
Okay.
Had a great New Year. Looking for last time around the horn here, and looking forward to a good 2015. Thank you.
Okay, great. Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, happy New Year. Just as a reminder, I will be out of town next week on business. I saw that reflected.
Okay.
So I will not be here next Tuesday. Please don't. That does not mean that I'm signing up for every committee. Make sure that that's on the record.
Oh yeah.
All right.
Councilmember Gamble, since you're going to be gone next week, and you had questions about the curbs, do you want me to touch base with you?
Yeah, that would be great. Electronic copy, whatever. I was able to look a little bit here. I feel better now that I wasn't the only one looking at the picture wrong.
Okay,
totally looking it looked to both sides. And
yeah.
Now, again, I hate to admit it, but the Councilmember Gehring was the one that able to.
Hate to admit.
to show me the way that it really is supposed to look. It's like looking at a 3D pic or one of those whatever pictures. All of a sudden it comes clear. but I think the Google helped as well.
Okay, so if you have any concerns, if you could contact me or
yeah, I mean, really, all it is right now is just the dollar. I mean, you know, hey, what's the additional cost? So it would be the question around, you know, for those that are using them, you know, what's the maintenance associated with them? Whether, you know, what is the difference in the frequency? If you're depending on how many times you're pulling them out, putting them in, does that make a difference? I'm assuming it does. It may not. It may, you know, be no difference at all.
Okay.
And then if we know what type we're going to use, what would be great is if we could have a link to, you know, a site that we can actually, you know, just kind of look. I mean, I was just on a site and there's 80 million different kinds of them. They're blue, pink, you know, yellow, all across the board. So
I'm not proposing pink or blue.
Okay. Well, I mean, I imagine blue, though, would be potentially for a handicap spot. That actually made sense to me. So anyway,
point made.
Okay.
All right. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay, Councilmember Davis.
Good to see everybody in the new year.
You too.
That's about it.
Councilmember Kemp.
I'll echo that. Happy New Year. Welcome back, everybody.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Yes. Happy New Year. I've had several conversations over the last couple of weeks or week with reps from the library, food bank, and senior center in regards to Community Transit's proposed elimination of the bus route on Village Way. The feedback I've gotten is that it's just going to have a big impact on people that use those three services. And I did speak to the Mayor Thomas on Friday about it and seeing if there's anything that we could do, Council, City, Mayor, and he did, there is a draft letter in your packet there to consider. Village Way, everyone's familiar with it. I'm assuming it goes right by the library, kind of behind the City Hall here. There's three stops along that route, or along the Village Way, one being right in front of the library. The area that runs in front of here, which is essentially where the buses would run if they were to eliminate Village Way, straight shot down Main Street, there's no stops. So there's great improvements with this proposed change because it adds the rest of Main Street, including going in front of WorkSource and the prison down Frylands, 154th. But yeah, I think that eliminating Village Way is not the best move, and you know, we could certainly use the buses down there too for those services. So Mayor Thomas, if you had anything to add on that, because I know you had conversations as well.
Yeah. So what I've done is I've prepared a draft memo here. If council would like, I could put down respectfully on behalf of the City Council, I'm asking Village Loop to remain as part of the route. I can certainly have that added, or if you've got anything else you'd like to see in the letter, I can add that. I would like to send this out by tomorrow afternoon, and I have sent this to all the people that contacted me, which would be the food bank, the library, the Boys and Girls Club, and the senior center. So I sent that out to them this evening. Councilmember Gehring.
And thanks. I know this is your time, so I'm absolutely in agreement. I would love to see the bus service stay there. It's important. People use it all the time. I'd love to see this be from everybody,
mm-hmm.
Unless someone would object. You know, it'd be great to have the full council on here. So maybe changing it to we,
mm-hmm.
You know, and then mayor on behalf of. I'd love to see senior housing capitalized. I think senior is a selling point. And then I'd also like to have the word something about it being vital. I was thinking of the word vital in somewhere. I can't remember. I can't remember what I wanted to know. Bus stops in Village Way are, I would just say, are vital and a benefit to people using or residing in Phil's. I just think I like to see that word in there. It adds a little bit of emotion. That's what we want. We want some emotion to this because it is a big deal to us and to the people that Councilmember Rasmussen's been talking to. So, I personally would like to see those kind of changes. But I'm in support. Yeah.
I was just going to add to that from a vital perspective. These are all services that not or folks that are utilizing their services don't always have a means of transportation of getting there. So that's why having public transportation is such something to that effect. I mean, I think it's implied by just saying, the food bank, the senior center. I mean, I know we're providing, funds for a bus for the senior center to go and pick people up. So to I just to me it just doesn't make sense, counterintuitive to what we're trying to do, is to get people there.
I mean, it is just a loop, but that loop is vital, and just, you know, using some sort of language to that effect. Yeah.
If Councilmember Rasmussen will yield for a second,
yeah.
could we have a motion to make this officials that we have the backing of the full council for this letter. You'd like to make something like that? You have the floor.
It would be a motion to the effect of...
To the effect of...
City Council supports continuation of community transit service along Village Way.
And
we can make that official resolution.
Right.
And then it's on the record that we as the council support continued community transit service.
Or we can make a minute order.
So it would be...
You just add it to the agenda.
Yeah, something to the effect that I move that the City Council does hereby express its support for continuing to have Village Way... continuing to have bus stops along Village Way, and to request that the mayor express that to community transit.
A little more formal than minutes.
There you go.
So moved.
So moved.
Excellent. I have a motion from Councilmember Rasmussen per what I just read, and I have a second from
Councilmember Camp.
Councilmember Camp. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, did we do that correctly? Do they need to add that to the agenda or anything? Okay. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. Okay. Anything else, Councilmember?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Councilmember Cuddeback.
I was just going to add it might be nice to put the name of what the senior housing is there. I know it's
good point.
It's yeah. By the county, but it'd be nice to have the formal name in there of that. But that's it. No. Happy New Year. 3 weeks was a nice. I'm off. Had a great holiday, great December, so happy to be back, though.
Thank you. We'll go back to staff. I'm sorry, Councilmember Hanford.
Happy New Year to everybody. Had a great Christmas season. Because of the challenges that we had downtown Seattle with the rioting and stuff that ruined our Black Friday, or not Black Friday, but the tree lighting ceremony downtown that we went to, we stayed away from downtown doing Santa Claus pictures down there, broke major traditions, and we went to Ben Franklin, and Adrian's been begging me for a long time to come there, you know, and absolutely loved the Santa at Ben Franklin, just... He blew us all away, so that was really cool, and it was neat to finally get to experience that here in town, and so we'll be back next year, and very good. He's got us converted.
Comment on that?
Yeah.
So if you really enjoyed that, I highly suggest emailing the Ben Franklin at, like, it's on Facebook, because... As of right now, he's not scheduled to come back for next year with Santa Claus. It's been 14 years. So
I will do that. I will definitely do that.
Everybody, yeah.
So anyway, Happy New Year. Yesterday, we finalized our adoption of the 14-year-old girl that we've had with us for about 4 months now. And so the house is full, and everybody's full happy.
Yeah.
Nice.
Congratulations.
Awesome. Thank you.
It's really awesome.
Thank you.
Okay. Back in the back of the room, Diane. Okay. Mike?
Thank you, Mayor. We're advertising for requests for proposals for food and beverage concessions at Lakeside Park and Scarborough Park. So just open up the
app today.
Yeah. And so we're looking for a new concessionaire. And they're due on the 22nd of January. So hoping to have something for you all the February 17th.
Thank you, Mike. Chief.
Nothing for the department, but I was extremely disappointed just to learn just a moment ago that Santa's not coming next year.
I can tell that I knocked you off your lip on that one.
Okay.
I'm can't be saved. You picked that up, though, right? Got to email Adrian.
Okay. Brett?
I can't follow that.
Okay. Okay, for me, so...
Good idea.
I was off the last couple of weeks, but came in here to City Hall for several hours, worked a little bit on reviewing the 2015 comp plan draft material that was provided to us by our consultant, got some feedback. The staff got some feedback to them on Friday last week, and so we're hoping that by Tuesday next week, while we won't have a presentation on it, that there will be some information at the dais here so that you can have an extra week or two to chew on it before a joint meeting near the end of January. So, also did some other things last week, including running into Lake Ty at a chamber event. So, Lake Ty was cold.
Made quite the splash.
What's that?
Made quite the splash.
Made quite the splash.
Looked great in slow motion.
Yeah, thank you. If you. Snohomish Tribune has a photo also, so thank you. And I think that's all I have for right now. Gene?
I would just like to thank the mayor and staff for helping fill in for me the past couple of weeks or month or so. I was in and out with a sick wife. So at any rate, I really appreciate the help that I've received. And Mayor, thank you.
Thank you,
in for me a lot, so I appreciate that.
Thank you. I'm happy. Things are better. So. All right. Why don't we go over the extended agenda and the draft agenda for next week?
Okay. Draft agenda for January 13th, 2015. The YMCA will be here doing a brief presentation. We have the consent agenda. And under unfinished business, we have coffee stand regulations. Under new business, we have the discussion regarding the official newspaper for the city. Under final action, we have appointment representative to various boards, committees, and forums. We've added a number two item to reconvene discussion on the Lewis and Main sewer separation project. And then we have staff reports.
Okay. Does anybody have any additions to next week's agenda? Councilmember Camp? I'm sorry, Gehring.
Thank you. Actually, not next week, but to the point that you just mentioned.
For the extended agenda?
Yes, with regard to the, you know, talking about the comp plan and us as, you know, kind of where it stands.
Yeah.
When Paul was here presenting last time, and we had some side conversations while that was going on. One of the areas in which is important to me and important, you know, to include in this document is really where you know, having a sense of place. And there were some kind of broad color swaths that incorporated areas that just don't belong together, and so that was concerning to me.
Mm-hmm.
We have some very clear dividers of neighborhoods in town, and I don't know how you can't. I mean, you have to include those as far as 522. You live on one side or the other. Those are completely different neighborhoods, ages, things like that. And so, in planning on each of those, you know, will naturally be a little bit different. That needs to be included. I didn't see that. We haven't had the chance to even. And I know it's coming up, but I'm just expressing my. I was a little concerned when I saw that. And so, the more we can talk about it between now and July or whatever, or August or whatever it is, we're going to finish it. That'd be great. And North Hill stuff too. People don't know what North Hill means. I mean, people are, it's known as, you know, they're the northern neighborhoods, but you live in the farm or you live in the foothills or you live in Sinclair Heights or Trombley. So just little things like that. Make sure people know what it's talking about. If you said, hey, I live in the northern neighborhoods. If you live on the North Hill, you're like, where's the North Hill? So, I mean, just, you know, anyway, the more we can talk about it between now and then, the better. So I think you already said it's coming up, but I'd love to see it. You know, even regularly, how we doing? You know, if it's just us, it doesn't have to be joint meeting. You know, having us here doing so. Thank you.
What you'll be seeing next week will be text, their policies and goals, and there may be. Brad, do we anticipate having a sample comp plan designation map?
Yeah.
Right. And because I provided the same feedback both before that meeting and also after that meeting, I wouldn't expect to see those designations that we saw on that original map.
Yeah.
So, anyway. And I don't remember reading those either in the text. So those were not in the text that I looked at last week either.
I appreciate it. Thanks. Yeah, just visibility discussion time. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Gamble?
And just one for the extended agenda, since now the meeting's on the
on the map, February 24th, I will be out of state. I'll be gone.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Why don't we go over the extended agenda real quick, and then is there anything else you want to highlight on the extended agenda?
I don't. We've moved some things out. The social media, I believe, we moved out. Is that correct, Liz? Yeah, we moved that out. We just haven't had a chance to work on that, and we need to get it in front of Zach as well. So we figured we would do that prior to bringing it forward to council. We just haven't had a chance to do so. So we moved that out today. And I think that was about it. Oh, the sign code enforcement. We also ended up moving that out. We've been focused on the comp plan update. So we do have some concerns on the way the sign code was put together that we need to dive into. So that's going to take a little more time and than we expected. So
sure.
We'll be bringing that back.
Sure. Can I ask about the school board bond support for that? Does there, do we need that sooner than later? Any reason why it's on the 27th versus
It's okay. The 27th is when there are members of the school board available to be here, so that if you know, so they can speak to the topic and also be present if you know if a decision is made to approve it.
Okay. Very good. Thanks.
Yep. Did you want to see it sooner or?
I was thinking that it would come sooner, but I didn't know that. I appreciate that clarification.
Because no, I had we were looking at it being the 13th or the 20th, and the request was for the 27th or the 3rd.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Okay. We are now going, and just FYI, we do have a need for an executive session after the next item. And Liz, is this you now? Okay.
This is like the 1-2 minute condensed version, right?
Like this.
Probably. Oh.
Why is everybody leaving?
It is. Legally required.
Don't take it personal.
Talk really fast.
I had a vision of you sitting on Santa's lap.
No one has any questions.
I'm thinking we can get him to come back. We just send the chief over there. That was Councilman Davis's suggestion. I think it's a great idea.
Scare him. Have Hanford. You want this?
Before I gotta get back up.
Video. And then after we watch the video, we'll go through that PowerPoint presentation. It's basically just a review, so if you have any questions while we're going through the video, maybe write down those things, and then we'll just breeze through that PowerPoint and hit any questions you might have. So, thank you very much. Here we go.
Darn, we can't do it tonight.
Shucks. Next week.
It receives 72%.
Oh, there you go.
The purpose of the act is to provide public full access to information concerning the conduct of government, mindful of individuals' privacy rights, and fulfill the desire for the efficient administration of government. The law is based on the principle that open government is essential to a free society. All state and local agencies must comply with the Public Records Act. All public records must be disclosed unless a law exempts records or information. There are well over several hundred exemptions. Some of those exemptions are listed in the Act, but many exist in other state and federal laws. The Act is a broad mandate interpreted in favor of disclosure, and its exemptions are narrowly construed.
This training presentation is based on the Public Records Act and the Attorney General's model rules. The rules are online at the Attorney General's website shown here. They provide examples of steps to comply with the Public Records Act. An agency may adopt any part of the model rules into its own rules. The model rules provide comments that are useful for interpreting the Public Records Act and for training agency personnel. The model rules are non-binding, but they are based on extensive outreach, court decisions, and have been cited favorably in court cases. This training video contains 15 short segments. You've just heard from the Attorney General about the history, purpose, and intent of the Act. The remaining segments will cover scope of the Public Records Act, general obligations of an agency, what is a public record, requests for records, initial agency responses, reasonable estimates, adequate searches, disclosure and electronic records, managing broad requests, exemptions, exemption law, fees, liability, and additional resources. The Act regulates the disclosure of public records. It has many components, and compliance requires training. Training can be the difference between a satisfied requester and expensive litigation. The Act applies to both state and local agencies. A state agency includes every state office, department, division, bureau, board, and commission. A local agency includes every county, city, town, municipal corporation, special purpose district, and other forms of local government. In some cases, an entity which is not an agency can still be subject to the Act when it is the functional equivalent of an agency. This determination depends on whether it performs a government function, receives government funding, the extent of government's involvement in regulation, and whether the entity was created by government. Courts are not subject to the Act. Agencies must appoint a public records officer responsible for being a point of contact for the public and for overseeing compliance. The name and contact information of the public records officer should be published with information on how to submit requests for records. Agencies must also publish information on the agency organization, rules, and procedures, and an index of specific categories of records. Agencies are required to adopt reasonable rules to provide full public access to public records, and to protect public records from damage or disorganization, to prevent excessive interference with other essential functions of the agency, and to provide fullest assistance to inquirers. A public record is any writing relating to the conduct of government which is prepared, owned, used, or retained by any state or local agency, regardless of physical form or characteristics. It could be an email, text message, paper, letter, or memo, an audio or video recording, a picture, image, map, or any recording of information or data compilation from which information may be obtained or translated. A public record is not just what you create, but could include documents created by citizens or private companies that are used or received by government. A public record may also include documents not possessed by the agency, but which were used by the agency. For example, the courts have described that work documents on the personal computer of an agency employee are subject to a request under the Public Records Act. Any person wishing to inspect or copy public records of an agency should submit the request in writing using the agency's request form. The Public Records Act doesn't prescribe any official format for a valid request, so an agency must honor valid requests for identifiable records, regardless of the format of the request. A requester who chooses not to use an agency form should give the agency fair notice that it is submitting a request for public records. If an agency has adopted reasonable rules on how requests should be submitted, the agency may rely on those rules. The agency should be helpful to the requester in explaining how a request should be submitted and to whom. Records shall be available for inspection and copying upon request for identifiable records, so requesters should give a reasonable description of the records. A request for information is not the same as a request for public records. The Public Records Act does not apply to requests solely for information. There is no duty to create a record that does not exist in order to fulfill a request for records or information. However, requests for information are at times easier to fulfill. Fulfilling a request for information may avert a large public records request. An agency must promptly respond to public records requests. Within 5 business days of receiving a request, an agency must respond. An initial response may be in one of the following: acknowledging receipt of the request and providing a reasonable estimate of time for further response, or fulfilling the request, or providing an internet address and link to the records on the agency's website, or seeking clarification, or denying the request with an accompanying written statement of the specific reasons. Reasonably clear requests for identifiable records may require no clarification. However, some requests are unclear. Seeking clarification permits the agency to identify responsive records, which in turn will aid in determining the scope of the request. Clarifying a request provides fullest assistance to the requester, so the requester receives and pays for only those copies that are desired. Clarification may also result in prompt disclosure by identifying only those records desired. An agency should not seek clarification if the request for identifiable records is reasonably clear. However, if the agency does seek clarification, and the requester fails to clarify a request, then the agency need not respond to it. An agency's initial response to receiving a records request should provide a reasonable estimate of the time to fully respond when more time is needed. A reasonable estimate should account for many factors, including the time to have the requester clarify the request if needed, as well as time to assemble and review records, provide notice to affected persons or agencies if needed, to redact information, and to create a withholding or exemption log. An agency should not use the same estimate for every request. but each reasonable estimate should be based on these factors, as well as the complexity of the request, other pending requests, agency resources, and other agency essential functions. It is a good practice for an agency to briefly explain to the requester the basis for the estimate in the initial response. Extending the estimate is appropriate when circumstances have changed or additional information has come to light. Agencies are encouraged to briefly explain the need to revise an original estimate. An agency bears the burden of showing its search was adequate. Consequently, agencies should be able to document how a search was conducted and, for example, what search terms it used. An adequate search depends on the facts of each request, but it is one that is reasonably calculated to uncover all responsive documents in whatever form, paper or electronic. An agency must make more than a perfunctory search and follow obvious leads as they are uncovered. The search should not be limited to one or more locations if there are additional places where responsive records are likely to be found. It is possible to conduct an adequate search and still not locate a responsive document. However, if a responsive record is not located, the agency will have to prove its search was adequate. An agency must make records available during its customary office hours for a minimum of 30 hours per week. Public records are presumed to be open for inspection and copying unless a specific law exempts the record or information from disclosure. The Records Act does not distinguish between paper and electronic records. Most agencies create records in an electronic format. A copy of an electronic record should be produced in the requested format if feasible. Metadata is information embedded in a document that provides detail about the document's characteristics. This may include information such as when the document was created, edited, recipients, and so forth. Non-exempt metadata must be disclosed when expressly requested. Agencies should develop policies addressing technology concerns, such as when agency employees may use personal devices for public uses. When agencies obtain technologies, they should consider not only the agency's business operation needs, but also records retention and disclosure requirements. Agencies are encouraged to make public records widely available electronically, particularly commonly requested records. For example, an agency could make commonly requested records available on its website. Then, an agency could fulfill its obligation to provide access to a public record by providing a requester with a link to a specific agency webpage containing an electronic copy of the requested record. For requesters without access to the internet, an agency could provide a computer terminal at its office. An agency may receive a broad request that asks for any and all records related to a topic. Agencies may not deny a request because it is overly broad. After an initial search shows that there are potentially hundreds or thousands of different types of responsive or potentially responsive records, a public records officer should contact the requester to explain the estimated total number of records that would need to be searched, or provide other information describing the anticipated scope of the search. Then the agency could do clarification to ask if the requester wants all of the different types of responsive records and is willing to pay for all of the copies, or if instead the requester is seeking only some of the records. A broad request will usually result in a longer estimate for full disclosure. In many instances, a requester will narrow the scope of the request to enable the agency to provide disclosure more promptly and less expensively. An agency may manage broad requests in a couple ways. An agency may require a deposit in an amount not to exceed 10% of the estimated cost of providing copies for a request. If an agency makes copies in response to requests available on a partial or installment basis, The agency may charge for each part of the request as it is provided. If an installment of records request is not claimed or renewed, the agency is not obligated to fulfill the balance of the request. Finally, use of electronic technologies to search, review, redact, and disclose public records can reduce overall costs of compliance for agencies. Agency responses refusing in whole or in part inspection or a copy of any public record shall include a statement of the specific exemption authorizing the withholding of the record and a brief explanation of how the exemption applies. Exemptions exist throughout the Public Records Act and in other state and federal laws. Common exemptions include information such as personal information and files maintained for agency employees if hired, investigative files and how the law enforcement or agencies with authority to discipline members of the profession, the non-disclosure of which is essential to effective law enforcement or for the protection of a person's right to privacy, educational records of students in public schools, attorney-client privilege information for law product related to litigation, or protected health care information. There is no statute providing a general privacy exemption. If privacy is an express element of a specific exemption, it is only evaded if disclosure would be both highly offensive to a reasonable person and also not of legitimate concern to the public. Exemptions must be construed narrowly. The general rule is that an agency redacts or withholds only the exempt information and produces the non-exempt information. An acceptable way of providing this information is with a withholding index, often called an exemption log. The information provided as part of the log should include a description of the type of record or part of record denied. The description should include identifying information from the document. For example, whether the document is a letter or email, the date the document was created or other relevant date, the total number of pages, and the sender and recipients. The log must include the statutory authority making the information exempt and a brief explanation of how the exemption applies. Some of this information will be evident on the face of the document where redactions have been made to only part of the document. An exemption log may be provided in different formats and may be handwritten or compiled in a spreadsheet. The format is not relevant so long as all the required information is provided. Any person may inspect non-exempt public records for free. An agency may not charge for the time of staff to search, review, or redact public records. An agency may charge for the actual per-page or other copying costs. Staff time to copy and mail the requested public records may be included in an agency's costs, but an agency may not include staff salaries, benefits, or other general administrative or overhead charges unless those costs are directly related to the actual cost of copying the public record. An example of when an agency may want to charge for the actual cost of staff time is where an agency scans paper records and copies them into an electronic format. The charges should be reasonable and related to the wage of the person likely to be repeatedly assigned this task. If an agency does not have staff available to make copies, for non-exempt records, an agency may send a scanning or copying project to an outside vendor and pass on the actual cost of the requester. In many cases, the cost of creating an electronic copy of an electronic record is small or practically nothing. The fee for a record that was already created electronically and simply copied onto a CD should basically be only the cost of receiving the envelope and postage. However, an agency may want to charge the actual time of staff to copy electronic records to a CD, where large amounts of data, such as GIS data, must be compiled with staff who have technical expertise and requiring a sizable time period to complete. An agency must make available for public inspection and copying a CD statement of the actual per page or other costs and how it determines actual costs. An agency that has not determined its actual costs may not charge in excess of 15 cents per page for copies of public records. Any person having been denied an opportunity to inspect or copy a public record may seek further review in the agency, and the person may also file a lawsuit to enforce his or her right to access public records. A lawsuit may be filed in court within 1 year of a claim of exemption of the last production of public records on an installment basis. The agency has the burden of proof to demonstrate that public records were lawfully denied. If it does not meet this showing, an agency will pay the requester's reasonable attorney's fees, costs, and potential penalties for violations of the Public Records Act. Lawsuits for public records can be extremely time-consuming and expensive for agencies. Understanding and correctly applying the law is a good risk management tool for state and local government. In rare cases, individual employees may also be civilly or criminally liable under other laws for violations of the Public Records Act. State agency employees and state officers are subject to the Ethics in Public Service Act. It is a violation of that state ethics law for state employees or officers to intentionally conceal a public record required to be released under the Public Records Act. State agency employees and officers may be fined up to $5,000 per violation of the state ethics law. It is also a crime for any agency officer to willfully mutilate, destroy, conceal, erase, obliterate, or falsify any record of that agency's office, except where the law expressly authorizes non-disclosure or destruction of records. The crime is punishable by imprisonment of up to 10 years or a fine of up to $5,000 or both.
Thank you for participating in the Attorney General's Open Government Training. For more information, there are available resources for agencies to receive training and technical assistance for compliance with the Public Records Act. An employee should first consult with its agency's public records officer for routine assistance or training. Additional resources are listed on this website. The Assistant Attorney General for Open Government is also available to provide information about the public records. Thanks again for watching.
Local agencies and solicit that this is not a good. And it
definition of what a public record is. And again, that is regardless of the, how it is retained, whether it's electronic or on a paper copy or digital. And a definition of writing, and that kind of goes further into that, other means of recording any form of communication. Media is that word. Not, again, a note about items that are retained by the agency or officials on home computers or non-agency email accounts. So if it falls under those definitions on the last couple pages, but it is not on a city-issued device, it still falls under this act. So a quick review there on the PRA procedure. Appoint a public records officer. In general, the city has two. I am the public records officer for City Hall records, so anybody that falls under the City Hall entity over here. Sherry Simonson is defined as the public records officer for our police agency. We do have a public records policy, which is that published procedures. It has not been updated for a couple of years, and I know that they were working on an update before I came in here, and it's something I'd like to pick up and just update. Hopefully I'll get to that this year. But it does define us as two separate entities. We have two separate forms, one for police, one for City Hall records. And online it is divided that way as well. And so we encourage people to go directly to police for all of their records regarding police records and to me for any other records. And I farm them out to the rest of the city or to electeds, et cetera, as needed. The published fee schedule, that's included in our fee schedule resolution. List of laws, that's also in our policy. Indexes of record, we have a resolution that actually exempts us from having to keep index of all the records. That was a question that came up a while back, but that was approved quite a while ago, I believe. And then non-exempt records available for inspection and copying during business hours. Everyone here on staff works on public records requests every day, I can tell you that. So that is definitely a citywide effort there to make records available, either providing them an email or having staff available for people to come in and look at records and then providing copies as requested. There's a little more information on those requesting records there and using the form. We do have the form out there online. In general, we do accept verbal requests, and we accept email requests, written requests, and what I ask staff to do is try and document them in a written format, hopefully via email, so that we can just track that in a written format. And of course, I do keep a tracking log of all the records requests that come through my office to keep track of our deadlines and the actions that have taken to fulfill these requests. But trying to get some of those responses, the 5 business days to respond, and the options for response. And I pretty much try to facilitate the 5 business day response. However, staff certainly can do that on their own as well. And when we do have to ask for more time or provide installments, I also help facilitate that process for staff. We do often seek clarification. Obviously, it's good to know exactly what they're looking for, and a lot of times people just need to talk to someone to find out exactly what they want, and sometimes it helps narrow the request quite a bit, so we do utilize that option. Sometimes it's just very informal in talking with the requester, but we always try to document what we've determined, and sometimes we do have to formalize it by using our legal system. Estimates of time, we utilize this as well. Often I will try to find out how long it might take staff to respond, and we'll put an estimate out, so we do utilize this quite a lot as we've had a lot of requests and staff time has been. So luckily everyone so far seems happy with the responses we're giving, even within a certain time frame. The information on searches and documenting your search and thinking of all the places that these records might exist. I try to help educate staff when they're trying to figure out where they should look and how they should document. And as well, if I need to for my own personal searches, I do that in our tracking logs. We utilize installments quite a bit as well. This allows us to get some records to a requester right away, things that we know that we can get hold of. and then also allows us more time to search deeper to make sure that we are providing the most assistance possible and to search all areas that we think that records might be available. Often we do have to review documents for exemptions, and if you see the example up in the upper hand right corner, possibly do redaction prior to disclosing records. And any exemptions that are taken from my end, I normally pass them through our attorney, and they help me determine which exemptions apply and then work with them to create the law before they go out to our public. Just a little further on that exemption, everything that kind of goes on the exemption log. And that exemption log is the draft that we actually created with the attorney's office, so we feel pretty confident in what we're providing. Just a few notes on the privacy, that there's no general privacy exemption, and that's just something to remember with the documents that are going out, that you receive, that you create. There's no general provision, so anything that, you know, you may believe is private may not follow the criteria that is set on here as the bullet points wanted to, so just helpful information to remember. Again, our fees are set by fee schedule resolution every year, and our fee schedule is posted online, and also some of the common fees are listed on our public records request forms. So regardless of how we take in a request, we always try to get them to look at the form and sign the form just because it gives them more information that they might need. We have copying fees for different sizes of documents that might be more money. We also have scanning fees for records that we scan and email, and then we also have fees for production on CD, DVD, or flash drives. Those are all within our schedule. Just a few notes on the enforcement of penalties, civil penalties, the attorney fees and costs. Don't want to go into this too far. There's a whole lot of this information. These are the mitigating factors for that can reduce the penalty. Kind of blurry, but these are generally thought of as bullet points to help determine if you're doing a good job in fulfilling a request. So in general, public records officers will look at those items and ask their staff if they're following those items, even with difficult requests, especially to make sure that we're trying to do the best job that we can do. And then of course, aggravating factors that you want to avoid. And then just a couple of other laws that they mentioned there in the video. All liability and penalties assessed under state ethics law. We didn't really go over this in the video, but here's some risk management tips. You know, just having people here at the city review these items and be aware of them. Training is a big one, obviously. There you go, training. And this just kind of goes over that the bill that we talked about earlier in the Open Government Training Act, and how this training will also be given to all newly elected and also to any public records officers that work for the city. And I've contemplated having this available to all city employees. It's training in the works. And then just some notes on the PRA assistance, the Attorney General's office. I have to say that Nancy Creer, who's in the video, I've gone to two trainings of hers. She's actually a really great person and answers great questions. And they said something about how many questions they've had and how many questions they've answered since this law went into effect, and it's amazing. And I do want to just say that Councilmember Kutoff, when we did the OPMA training and you asked a question about serial meetings, I actually brought that up, asking if they would include information on that. And Ms. Creer did say that they were planning to address that in some of their follow-ups. So that was really great. So that's a quick thank you there. This PRA training doesn't specifically address retention, so I'll advise that I add just a few notes on retention, since retention is part of this training as well, even though it wasn't included in the AG's version. They normally defer to the Washington State Archive. As you know, the Washington State Archive has a retention schedule. It's a general schedule that basically tells an agency how long documents should be kept on site and then what disposition should be taken once they meet that minimum retention. The cities are meant to keep their documents under this index. So basically, if you have a document here, you go look on that retention schedule, find out how long you need to keep it here, and then once it it meets that time, you look at the disposition. Is it destroyed? Is it passed archives? Is it keep forever? And then we determine how we will finalize the document for disposition. There are forms that people fill out before documents are destroyed or sent off site. Those are reviewed by the public records manager, which is me. So I make sure that they put down the proper retention schedule number and the proper description, and then I sign off on the documents, and we keep those forever. And both the destruction logs and the passing to archive logs are meant to be kept for the life of the agency. So those are important in case anyone ever came back and said, well, what about this record? You can pull out your papers that say, you know, we disposed of it correctly for the Washington State Retention Log. So another quick note on retention regarding records of counsel. A lot of the records that you're receiving are secondary copies, or they're documents with minimal retention value. A lot of things that you are receiving are things that you can give away once no longer received. There's a list of about five types of these documents that are in the Washington State Retention Schedule, and if I leave myself a note, I will email that out to you so that you can see that information. Also, there are procedures here for mail that comes in for counsel as it is reviewed by staff, which is me at this time. And if it's anything that looks to be a original correspondence type document, a copy is kept here by me for retention purposes and then provided to the counsel. However, just something to keep in mind, the retention is up to each individual. So if you have records that you have at home that you have received that are public records, they do need to be kept for the retention laws. So if you ever have any questions on the documents that you have as a council member, let me know and I can help you determine how you should be keeping those records, how you should be filing, etc. Do you guys have any questions? Thumbs up.
Steve.
Nice job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we do have a need for an executive session that I am told will be for approximately 2 minutes. Okay.
Wait.
And with no action except for possible adjournment. Do I see heads nodding? Okay. And what is the RCW citation?
Pursuant to RCW 4230.110(1)(i), and the executive session will again last for 2 minutes, after which there will be no action taken except adjournment, and that should do it. Thank you.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
I've been sitting long enough.
I know.
Okay, we're back in session. Councilmember Hanford.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Cuddeback. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 7-0. Thank you very much. Have a great evening.
Have a great evening.
Thanks, Zach.